Hello, and welcome back to Affirmative Action. I'm your host, Antoinette Grajeda. Public libraries are wonderful resources for communities both big and small. Libraries have long been a place where readers of all ages can borrow books for free, and students can participate in reading programs during their summer break. But libraries offer so much more than just free reading materials. Public libraries provide computers and internet access to those who may not have these things at home. Some have entire departments dedicated to helping people research their genealogy. Special programming can range from story time for your littles to yoga classes to financial literacy workshops. There's a wide range of resources and activities provided by public libraries, and oftentimes these services are provided for free. Although services can vary widely from library to library, the general public often isn't familiar with a library's resources outside of checking out books. To help educate communities of color about all of these resources, libraries sometimes hire multicultural librarians or community liaisons to bridge that gap between these public institutions and minority communities. Today, we're going to speak with four such workers from across Arkansas about their roles in their communities and some of the challenges they face in connecting people of color to their local libraries. Maria Aguilar is a community liaison for the Central Arkansas Library System. Diana Dominguez is the Multicultural Community Liaison for the Fayetteville Public Library. Tanya Evans is the Multicultural Outreach Librarian for the Springdale Public Library. And Tatiana Morales is the Multicultural Librarian for the Rogers Public Library. During our conversation, Tatiana shared what her experience with public libraries was like as a child growing up in Latin America.
I was born in El Salvador and I grew up in El Salvador. So libraries there's not as many as you have, as we have here, which is like a blessing that all of you have born here do not understand. But really, and it's different, a relationship and a lot of things you had to pay for. So programs really, it's not all free. So that's something that I'm really trying to tell the community here. But we would go, but mostly at my school, I was very lucky that I went to a great school and we had a library inside. That's really the only one I use. We didn't really have a good public library nearby to go to. And then here, once I moved here and I discovered my library in Los Angeles, then that became, it was such an eye-opening. And I always remember this one. I was in high school and we had to read the yellow wallpaper. I don't know if you know that story. But anyways, I lost my copy because I'm very disorganized. So I went to the librarian. And I said, I need this story. And it's about this lady and she goes crazy. And at the end, she's crawling on the floor. And she was like, the yellow wallpaper. I was so like, wow, yes, that's exactly it. So from there, I think it was such a great experience. After that, she was so welcoming. And it really became part of like my routine going after that. And that's why great experiences, especially at the beginning, is just so important.
I love that story. Diana, do you want to go next?
Yeah, I can share. So I grew up in Webb City, Missouri, and so I utilized the Webb City Public Library, which is a pretty small size public library in comparison to the Fayetteville Public Library. And then from then on, I went on to use the Springfield Public Library, the different branches that they had when I did my undergrad in Springfield. And then and I moved here, used the Springdale Public Library. Actually, the Springdale Public Library was one of the first few kind of public institutions that I visited before I moved here. So my sister was doing grad school at the University of Arkansas, so she would utilize the Springdale Public Library a lot. And so when I would come and visit her and she still had homework, we would use the Springdale Public Library. So I feel like I've been a pretty consistent public library users since a small age. And even when I go on like road trips, I know it sounds super nerdy, but I actually go and scope out the public library just to see what it looks like there, the collections. And I grew up, I guess, because the public library was within walking distance, at least 15 minutes from where I lived. I would walk to the public library and utilize the computers there and would just spend some of my afternoons reading there. And then it wasn't until I did my grad school studies that I actually started utilizing the Fayetteville Public Library here. And it's interesting now working here, because I always tell people that, you know, I used to, because grad school is really, it's just a very trying experience. And so there's a very specific spot here at the Fayetteville Public Library that I would every like Sunday afternoon would have like a crying session because it's so hard. And so now coming and utilizing it as a staff member, I definitely have a very different perspective and able to enjoy it without kind of the stressors of grad school.
My grandmother taught me how to read. So when I was 4 years old, I could actually read books. And I grew up in a really tiny town in southern Arkansas. We didn't have a movie theater. We didn't have a mall. So the library was the place to be. So I just spent a lot of time growing up, you know, in our public library. And, you know, I want to make a response to a comment that Diana made. Whenever I go on trips, I go visit the public libraries also. And I'm so glad to know I'm not the only person who does that. Now I don't quite feel so nerdy.
How about you, Maria? What was your experience with libraries as a child like growing up?
I am originally from Mexico. And in my small war town, I have my first experience in a library when I be involved for a internship during the summer. It was very nice to know a lot of things that a library offered for the community. It was my first experience in my life.
So lots of different perspectives and lots of different experiences, but you've all ended up being, you know, community liaisons, multicultural librarians. So you're working to build that bridge between the library in your community and the community, or specifically communities of color. What is it about a library? What makes it, you know, a good place to reach out to communities of color? Why is that a good platform or a good place to try and connect with others in the community in that way?
Well, I believe that a library is a place where people can have equal access to information. I feel like in some respects, it just levels the playing field, because everybody may, you know, owning a computer, having internet is very expensive. And when you don't have that in your home, I mean, you are at some disadvantages, because, you know, the COVID pandemic brought out some of the inequalities with communities of color, because some of the, maybe the children that had to go to school at first were the children who could not do virtual schooling simply because they may have come from a family where the number one priority is, you know, we have to pay our rent, we have to put food on the table, and then computers, internet, and those type of things are secondary, and this is no fault. But I believe that libraries give equal access to information and technology to everyone.
To kind of echo what Tanya said, everything that she said is absolutely right. And also, now that I am in the library, it's also like a cycle. The way I feel is, if people are not using the resources, then we don't get the budget for it. So it's so important. It's like, we are helping each other. We are helping people by like everything that Tanya once said, having internet and computers and materials and GED preparation, citizenship studies, all of that we offered. But I feel like it's also a benefit for us, because then we can get more, like a bigger budget, and just continue like giving those services. So it's just, it's like a balancing act. And yeah, it's just about letting people know. That's what I have found out. A lot of people didn't know. I know myself, I used to go to Springdale and I knew Tanya from there. And I had no idea like all of the other resources. I thought the library is for books. And I think that's what a big part of what we're doing is, you know, kind of trying to let everybody know what else we have.
Yes, and the libraries is during the pandemic, we can see the dynamic that we can do it, creating programs online and cover the necessities of the community As Tatiana mentioned, provide free Wi-Fi 25 hours, 7 days during the week. The meal services was very important, and the collaborations and partnerships that we can create in this time help us to serve our patrons and detect the needs immediately and adapt the services and programs.
Yeah, I think a lot of what my colleagues have mentioned, I would also like to echo. I also feel like public libraries as public institutions that are intended to be accessible for all really needs to be reflected in the ways in which we're providing different programs or services to be able to engage a variety of the communities. And I think that's why also a lot of us, well, I guess I shouldn't speak for everyone here, but I feel like a lot of us did step into this role because of maybe the gaps that we did see across public libraries and wanting to bring in our own connections and our own perspectives as BIPOC people that had previously used the public library, you know, as a patron, someone that actually has a library card, to now a staff member that is working at a public library and is able to do programming and think about, you know, these additional perspectives that need to be taken into consideration when thinking about public libraries. And because public libraries are funded by taxpayers, I think we owe it to our communities to be making sure that, you know, what we're providing is not only relevant, but is truly accessible to them. And I think it's very quick and easy to be and to say that public libraries are accessible for all, but at the same time, we need to be looking at the history of public libraries and also be looking at the current systems now that might potentially provide certain barriers or limitations, whether or not we recognize that. And I think those sort of, you know, implicit biases or even like blind spots are important to address. Because I think for us, it's you know, we're even at an access of privilege and being able to be in this position and having access to all of these resources, but not many within our communities have that great access into these resources.
I feel like whenever I make a person a library card that I'm empowering them in a certain aspect. And I think it's really important too for us to know the history, you know, since a lot, I know here in Springdale, a large part of our community is an immigrant community. And I think it's valuable for us, well, for me, to do some research to find out what libraries were like in some of the countries that they come from, because I've heard some amazing stories where you could only go to the library if you were a university student or if you dressed nice. And I think a lot of people bring some of those same ideas when they come here, you know, not knowing that, you know, this is paid for with their tax dollars and they're welcome and they can come here and they don't have to be a university student. They don't have to be a student. They can be dressed nice, because I think we think about libraries as great public institutions in the U.S. open to everybody, but it's not the same in all countries.
That's a really good point. Part of your jobs is that education piece and letting people know, you know, what the library or what a public library should be here in the United States and what is offered. What are some of the types of programming that you've been able to offer as a community liaison or a multicultural librarian? Because I imagine your jobs are more than, as you kind of mentioned, than just making sure that there are some bilingual books on the shelves.
Well, I could. Although I'm the newest, like I have been leaning on Diana and Tanya to help me, because I've been in my position for 3 months. But I feel like the first thing I have, like really learning myself the library, learning myself the resources that we have, because we do have a lot of online resources and books and other things, but just trying to teach the community. So that's the first thing I've done. I don't think I'm ready for actually we did do a small DIA program, which I was very excited about. But I think like the thing that I'm focusing on right now is just like letting people know, and also like tutorials. That's really what I'm doing right now. Just like having some tutorials of the resources, bilingual resources, like the language, we have Mango languages and all those kind of things to help the community. So that's what I'm first focusing on. In a way, it's helping me to learn what it is and kind of organize it in my brain so I can explain to people this is what we have. And in the future, I don't know exactly. It's like a bit, it's part of my position to see what I want to focus on. And like Diana was saying, it's not just, it's different. We had different communities, we had different needs. So that's part of it, not just to kind of just jump in, at least from my perspective, to see, okay, this is what I want to do, but what really are the needs in the community? So for me, it's still part of a question mark also. And I like I said, I want to listen to their perspectives, and I know they're done great things already, so.
I joined Central Arkansas Library System in May 2020, and I have created a bilingual literacy programs with different topics, financial literacy programs, citizens, bilingual workshops, and early education, but are very focused to try to cover what the Latinx community is looking and how can connect them with a library and feel very welcome to this space that is very dynamic, to know a library and feel part of this.
Before I started working at the library here in Springdale, they already had ESL classes, they had citizenship classes. And as you probably know, Springdale, Arkansas has the largest Marshallese community in the mainland. And I had to try to think of a way to engage our Marshallese patrons into the library. They would come to the library, they would use the computers, they use the internet, they would print, fax, and photocopy, but they were not bringing their children to story time. They were not, like, I didn't really see a lot of books being checked out. So COVID made me more inventive. I had to think of a way to engage our Marshallese patrons. And I was actually told by a leader in the Marshallese community, oh, we're not that into books. We are an oral culture. Okay, so that's fine. But so what I did, I came up with a project called a virtual story time called Marshallese Story Time. I was looking at a library in New York and they had a Bengali story time. And I thought, why won't we do this with why can't we do this with Marshallese? So I asked some of the community leaders in the Marshallese community to read a story and let us videotape it and post it on our Facebook page. And my first victim was the head of the Marshallese consulate. He read the book in Marshallese. I read the book in English. And so therefore Marshallese Storytime was born. And I've asked several community leaders and we've done several Marshallese story times. And as a result, I just recently got a grant from the Asian American Pacific Islander Library Association to amplify Marshallese story time.
Congratulations, that's such a good thing.
Thank you.
That's really great to hear, Tanya. And I'm glad to hear how that program continues to be developed, and also glad to hear about the other successes that Maria and Tatiana are also having. As Tatiana and Maria mentioned, and I think Tanya has also mentioned this too, it's interesting because each of our public libraries are trying to kind of engage a different kind of sect of demographics, and the community needs vary. And then also, as Maria said, it's fluid, you know, it can change time from time to time. And I know Maria and I recently had a conversation too, you know, how do the dynamics of like migration or how do, you know, factors in migration influence, you know, the decisions that we make when it comes to understanding community needs in our respective cities and areas. And I think for us here at the Fayetteville Public Library, what we've been doing, I started in October. I feel like I always have to preface this because it feels like I started my job, you know, in 4 months in, 4 or 5 months in, the pandemic really hit us here. So then it was like putting it on halt and then doing virtual. But I think for most of our focus has been, prior it was instituting pop-up libraries. And so going to different community centers where we knew, you know, these folks maybe weren't, or communities weren't being engaged maybe to the full full extent. And so taking them library materials, I know Springdale Public Library has also started to do this, taking the materials and also signing them up for public library cards. We also started doing a bilingual story time, which has continued on, and then offering our English lessons through a partnership with Ozark Literacy Council. And then, you know, when COVID hit, for us here, we halted our in-person programming to doing virtual. And so my focus was more so, you know, partnering with different community organizations to talk about the resources that existed during, not only just during COVID, but also just throughout this entire time. Of course, there's limitations because it's still virtual and we might not be able to reach folks that don't have access to computers or Wi-Fi, but really wanted to also show the partnership that was growing between our library and community organizations. And really, truly, that's where I've found a lot of programming success, is partnering with other folks that, you know, have already strong ties or already have built that relationship and trust with the communities. You know, although we're coming in and bringing in our own, I think the community partnerships is really where it's at.
As you've mentioned, COVID has been a bit of a struggle trying to implement some of these things where you're connecting with people. What are some of the other challenges that you've faced in these relatively new roles?
I think in my case, like I mentioned a little bit at the beginning, the budget for the collection is smaller, but in a way it's because it's, if it's not get utilized a lot, the books don't get checked out a lot, then, you know, that all has to do with it. And I feel like, so that's what I kind of where I am. I feel like that's a struggle a little bit to get more. Although I had to say we do, I had a meeting with my director today and we talked about some ideas of how we can bring, and there's some a budget for me to get more books and try to get input from the community. So then we'll make more our collection more attractive. But I feel like even physically, the position where the collection and the materials are, I feel that could be a bit of a problem. And I have mentioned it already. Like we made a big giant sign with some of my coworkers and we put it above the collection so it can be seen from different areas. Because I feel like a lot of our patrons come, they like make copies or whatever. And our collection is like back here. So you don't really see it. So the access is not the same as another English collection, which, you know, it's like a give and take situation. So I think that's a big one for me. And we are thinking of creative ways to show what we do have without having, because there's something that's the space, you can add more space to the library. So it's just coming up with those creative ideas to make it more accessible, physically accessible for everybody. And I think another one, it would be working with the other, like the children's department, teens department, and how, because they have their ways, they have their programs already. And that came late in the year, of course, to kind of just work with them and include some of the Latinx. How can we make this more maybe bilingual stories like Diana was saying? And so I think those are the big ones for me, like figured out how to work with the other departments to include some of our culture in it, in more like the physical collection, how to make it more visible for the patrons.
A barrier for me and my role is during the pandemic was reaching the community, the Latinx community, because all the programs turned to virtual and they don't have a computer at home and find the channels to reach them. It was a barrier for me during this last year, but I am very positive that that in few months maybe we can start with events in person and will be more easy and broke this barrier that caused the pandemic.
Well, I would have to agree with Maria. It is just a lack of technology in a lot of homes. And at the Springdale Library, we bought more Chromebooks and made them available to check out, and also more hotspots for people who have devices and don't have internet. But it was just the technology, because we saw that big divide, you know, just throughout the pandemic, but prior to the pandemic, I just think one of the challenges was about just educating everybody about the resources we had. And fortunately, before I became a librarian, I actually taught adult ESL. And I was very happy to be welcomed back to some of the places I had worked to talk to the classes about the resources that we had for not just learning English, but for families. Because if you're working with parents, all parents want their kids to be successful in school. And when you can go to an adult ESL program and you can say, well, we have this for you if you're learning English, and then we have this for your kids. And if it's something for the whole family, you know, you have to I feel like a lot of it is in marketing, and marketing the library is something for everybody in the family, especially with you know, Latino communities. They're very family oriented and family based. So if you can show that mom or that dad, we've got something for everybody, I think you can get them to come to the library. And to know, let people know it's not just about books, because books can intimidate people. And if people think it's just about reading, but if you can meet a need, like a lot of our Latino community, they're wanting to prepare for their citizenship test. But when you provide free resources, like I have a partnership with USCIS, we get free study cards where that we can give to people, grandmas, grandpas, people of all ages, where they can prepare for their citizenship test. So you're meeting a need at the same time with free resources, because that's something that's really important in people's lives, that test.
Yeah, I think for me, outside of the challenges that were, you know, already mentioned just during COVID, I think I didn't come from a library services background, and I don't see that as a deficit whatsoever. But I do think it was a learning curve of understanding, even as an avid, you know, someone that frequents the public library, there was still a lot that I had to learn. Like even understanding our cataloging system, I just now had this morning one of my first work desk shifts at the youth services department. I was low-key freaking out this morning, not gonna lie. But you know, understanding how to actually, you know, check out a book, how to check in a book, how do you talk about, you know, cataloging with patrons or community members, how do you do programming within libraries. So I feel like there has been like a learning curve for me. And then I also feel like for the public library, I think this is as a whole, and I think this is also why we also do have the roles that we have, is because it's a learning opportunity for public libraries to understand the gaps and the barriers or limitations that exist. And it's been interesting. I know Tatiana kind of mentioned earlier, you know, getting programmers to also understand, you know, when we think about programming, who are we actually thinking about as the audience, you know, and how are we, as Tania mentioned, how are we marketing it? You know, are we creating a program that's taking into consideration, you know, activities for youth, you know, especially if it's BIPOC folks that might be more family oriented, you know, when thinking about a event that we did not last February, but the February before, we had a Grow with Google event where we invited Spanish-speaking business owners to come in and participate in a workshop. But my question also was, you know, I was getting feedback. I don't know what I'm going to do, because I also need someone to watch my kid, you know. So we paired it up with you know, a youth services component where there was children's activities happening at the same time as the workshop. And so I feel like there's, for me, it's also just communicating to even the institution, as great as it is, and communicating to them, there's additional ways in which we can be improving our programming and services. And we need to be thinking about who isn't engaging or utilizing the spaces now. And those are very easy conversations to have. They're not easy conversations to have, because I think we like to say that public libraries are a welcoming space for all, you know, but what actions are we actually taking to make sure that's true? You know, one thing that I was speaking of, a learning curve, you know, I didn't have any story time training prior to coming into this role, and knew that stepping in, that was also going to be learning curve. So I'm doing a story time training right now online. And one of the individuals that's participating was talking about one of the challenges that they face is that there's no interest, you know, from Spanish speaking Latinx. And for me, it's like, why don't you also ask, you know, how is it being marketed? What is your bilingual story time actually look like? And so luckily the instructor that's teaching this course also supported that. And I love how she said this. She said, her name is Katie Schreer, just to give her, you know, credit there. She says, sometimes it's worth reframing the challenge so that the library takes ownership instead of seeing it as the public's fault. For example, when I read lack of interest, I wonder, has the library historically displayed an interest in serving Latinx or Spanish speaking communities? Has the library invested time and financial resources in building relationships with the community? Is there anything to signal to the community that they are valued and welcomed by the library? And I feel like Cal's and even Tanya, Spring to Public Library, I don't know about Rogers Public Library, Tatiana, you know, has a history of doing that already. But, you know, those initial folks that were doing that, it's hard work because it's kind of an uphill battle of like, okay, I think this is what we need to do. But then there's all these other kind of layers, like even as Tanya mentioned, you know, you can make computers and hotspots available to community members, but if there is a low digital literacy, that's a whole nother issue too, because it's like, how are we helping them and assisting them beyond giving them just a computer or giving them internet access? And so for me, I feel like it's like a multi-layered set of different challenges. And I think, although I bring in my perspective, I also have to check myself and be like, there's access of privilege that I have that I have to think about, you know, how would this vary in comparison to my immigrant mother who speaks just Spanish, very limited English, you know, what would her experience be like coming into this gigantic, you know, beautiful building, but very limited information in Spanish. You know, now we have more information that's available in Spanish, but it's still pretty, it's daunting and scary.
And could I just add one more comment to what Diana said?
Sure.
And I don't want people to take this the wrong way, but again, I came from this from an education background. I taught high school for many years. I was also an adult ESL teacher. And one thing I think we have to take into consideration and think about, we can order all the Spanish books, we can order all the bilingual books, but there are people who may have low literacy levels in all communities. I mean, English, native English speakers from this country, you know, we just assume a lot of people in their countries hopped on the yellow school bus, went to the school, ate the free lunch, had free textbook. That is not the case. I taught adult ESL and a lot of Latin, and I'm not saying all people, there are people who are more educated than I am that come from, that are immigrants. Like we have a large population of immigrants with PhDs, doctorates, master's degrees. And then we have people that didn't have the privilege to go to school. We have people that may have gone to second grade or third grade. And I think a lot of time when we order our books or when we buy books, you know, everybody's not ready for Don Quixote in Spanish. And, you know, even with moms,
yes,
that are learning adult ESL, even bilingual children's books, you know, if you can get a book and it's bilingual and it's English and Spanish, and they could read to their child in their native language and pick up some English words. So one thing I think sometimes we have to take in consideration literacy levels, because so many times we just assume everybody has the American education experience. And I was so happy that some of my adult students, I'm sorry, I get emotional, but share with me like, Miss, I only finished the second grade, or Miss, I only got to go to school 1 year. And I think that's something we need to take into consideration when we buy our materials, because, you know, everybody didn't have the American hop on the school bus, have the free lunch, free textbook experience.
Absolutely. That's a really great point. So we spent a little bit of time talking about these challenges that you're facing. What kind of support do you need, or what kind of support can be offered to help make sure that you're able to accomplish these goals that you have in serving these communities?
I think what's really helped me is we've had a multicultural advisory board. And, you know, just being in communication with the churches, because, you know, in the Latin community and in the Marshallese community, there are pastors, there are community leaders in those specific communities that can best tell you what people need. Like if they need driver's license manuals in Spanish, or if they need this, and, you know, just having your finger on the pulse of that community in there and what they need, because it's easy for us to assume what they need, but and sometimes it's just best to ask them, what would you like the library to offer? What would you like to see in the library? And people will tell me things like, I need to learn how to write a resume, or I need to learn how to do this. So it's okay to talk to the community leaders. It's okay to have a multicultural advisory board, and it's okay to talk to the immigrant or Latinx or Marshallese patrons themselves to ask them, what would you like? You know, and I just feel like hearing from the customer or the patron, they could voice their needs.
Right. It's true. It's everything that you were saying. And I actually had, I read something about data that is something about it's better to have a little bit of data than have no data at all. And actually I'm starting to try to engage people as they come to the library. And I'm just like Diane, I'm starting to get trained in the reference desk, which freaks me out to even pick up the phone. And they're going to ask me some trick question, but being there and you can actually engage people. And I mentioned to one of the, actually today I had that experience. She came and she was looking for some GED books. And then she was telling me that she was also, she's trying to get her GED and citizenship classes. So that kind of helped me in a way to figure out, okay, so if I'm doing this online tutorials, then maybe that's something that I can focus. And that's, and like I said, trying, like Tanya was saying, even if you get some information, like a bit of a challenge for me too, is also how to get that information, how to get people to participate in surveys and things like that. But also a big one for me is kind of being new in the position, kind of leaning in other librarians who have the same position that I have. Like I had called both Tanya and Diana and just like having, taking 2 hour long conversations just to say, so how do I start? How do I get started with this? Because it's a new program. And in here in the library, we really didn't have a lot of multicultural programs. So it's just starting from scratch. So having that support of other people that have done it before, and of course, having the support of the administration to see how committed are we really to make these changes. And I think all those things are important for us to, you know, to be successful and to reach the community.
I feel like I lean on the support, as Tatiana had mentioned, from other folks that are already doing that work. I think because our positions are very particular within public libraries, I think public libraries are still kind of figuring out, even within our own positions, what to do, you know, and how to support us. I think hiring more folks to support the work that we're trying to do in public libraries is so incredibly needed, because we're only one person and we're trying to, you know, work the desk while also building the collection, while also doing programming, while also going out in the community and doing outreach, you know. And, you know, within all of that, we're also just trying to learn how to better engage our community. So I think hiring practices need to change across public libraries. But then again, you know, it's hard to be looking for a diverse set of candidates, you know, whether that be racially, culturally, or linguistically, if programs themselves aren't changing in the ways in which they're trying to get more folks in to get degrees, and not to say that you need a degree, you know, in public library services or sciences, but I think it's necessary to look at hiring more people to support the initiatives that we have. And I think that, as Tatiana had mentioned earlier, we need to be pumping more money into the programs and services. You know, we can't, for me, it's really thinking about, you know, if you want me to hire this BIPOC performer, I'm going to pay them. You know, I'm not going to ask them to just volunteer, you know, because BIPOC artists, creatives, you know, there's a whole another layer for them of getting work and getting compensated needs to happen. I'm also thinking about the need to be heard. That's the thing. I think we ourselves bring in a very unique perspective. And I think hearing us and what we offer to the table, because we're the ones that are seeing kind of this like double perspective of like the community, what the community sees or needs. And then also, you know, what does that look like internally here? So I think being receptive to the feedback that we're providing is necessary. And again, I know that those are really hard conversations to have, but necessary. And because of that, better compensation, you know? And I think that just, that's like a standalone thing, I think, honestly, for public librarians just as a whole. But again, because of the work that we're doing is very unique, there's a whole nother layer that we're bringing to the table.
Well, and again, I want to add, Tanya is so talky, and I feel like I'm the grandma in this whole situation because I've probably been in my position a little bit longer. I feel like having an outside community network is important because sometimes people will come to the library and we may not have the answer to the question, but to be able to point that person in the direction, because I know several immigration lawyers at the U of A. There is an immigration clinic that's free. I mean, you have to make an application and they have to accept your case. But there are a lot of people in the community that have the answer that I don't, and I may be able to point them in the right direction while we don't promote anyone else's businesses. But I try to give our patrons, like if they need somebody to translate a document or somebody to help them fill out documents, always have a good go-to list. And I try to make sure all the phone numbers work, that the people are still in business before I send them to that place. And I may add, well, these people will probably charge you something, but here's several resources so you can make the best decision. It's just being able to arm people with the best information so they can go out and get what they need, because we may not always have it at the library, but we do try to point them in the right direction.
Yeah, I'd like to add just like two other things. Speaking of outside, like networking, two things. So I feel like part of our job, you know, is to go out in the community and do outreach. And so I think reconsidering how people see certain positions within public libraries to give more flexibility within our positions, because it's like, you know, yes, maybe traditionally this is what it's looked like, but really that's not meeting the need. And that's why we need to be thinking outside of the box. Like a look at Maria's programming and her joint programming with the Consulate of Mexico and Little Rock, you know, and I feel like that's also an example of like thinking outside the box and being able to engage people that way. I think I've also just leaned on other BIPOC library workers that are outside of the area because it's so small here. It's like, you know, having a perspective outside of just this area has been helpful for me in terms of support and having that additional network.
Something that can be facilitate my job is to have a mobile library. We are working in this project, and I am crossing my fingers that we can have it soon, because it will be very helpful for me and my role as community liaison. Go to the people.
Yes, definitely. Meeting people where they are is so important. Is there anything else that we haven't really talked about that you want to make sure that we address?
I think the last comment that I would just add is, you know, as we're, you know, navigating, all of us are navigating our positions. I know these are hard conversations to have, but, you know, we are in these positions because we want to be making sure that our communities have access and because we do believe in the work. You know, at the end of the day, it's really hard, But at the end of the day, we want our communities to have greater access to public libraries. And, you know, a lot of the things that I mentioned today, I don't think are particular to my, you know, public library, but just to the culture within public libraries. And I think because of that, we've had to kind of go to each other and be like, okay, you know, Maria, what kind of programming do you have? You know, what kind of programming can we do together? You know, or hey, Tanya, there's this great resource in the community. Just want to let you know, because, you know, you have a huge Spanish speaking Latinx population over there. So I feel like a lot of the feedback that we are providing to our public libraries and our institutions where we work is in an effort to try to improve and to be making sure that our communities have greater access.
Well, and for my last comment, when I visit like adult education programs, or I go to Lupita's Beauty Salon or Paco's Yantaria, I also speak Spanish. I want people to know if they come to the library, they can ask for me and I will personally take care of them. If they don't speak English or if they're a little shaky with their English, you know, there's somebody that they know. I try to give them my card that they can actually ask for, that they've actually made contact, because that means a lot in the Latin community. And also, I think in other communities of color, people like having somebody they know and that they feel comfortable with. And I think that's really important to say, okay, you can ask for me. And I want to make that personal connection, because I, you know, now that we live in the world of so many things are automated, so many things are this, just having that one-on-one and having, you know, made that connection outside. So when people do come in the library, you're in my house and I'm going to make you comfortable and make you feel well while you're here.
I agree with Tania. Yes, my wish is they can come to the libraries and see hundreds of kids be here learning about how the dynamic can be a library, and feel very welcome to the community, and that they see in me a point of contact, and no matter if the library doesn't have the resources, maybe I can help them to find it with our networking or with our partners. So, but be a point of contact for the community.
Absolutely. Well, thank you all so much for the work that you're doing in your communities and being trailblazers in this sort of new area of work and being those community bridges. And we thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having us.
Muchas gracias. Muchas gracias por abrir este espacio. Thank you for opening this space to communicate our roles in the libraries in Arkansas.
Sí, por supuesto.
Yes, thank you so much, Antoinette. And thank you all, too, for the work that you all are doing and helping inspire me to think about additional ways to programming here.
Our guests today were Maria Aguilar from the Central Arkansas Library System, Diana Dominguez from the Fayetteville Public Library, Tanya Evans from the Springdale Public Library, and Tatiana Morales from the Rogers Public Library. Thank you all for taking the time to speak with us and provide some insight into your work. Well, that's it for today's episode. And remember, you can listen to past episodes of our podcast at argotsoul.com/affirmativeaction. You can also subscribe and rate our show on Apple Podcasts. I'm Antoinette Grajeda. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back next month with an all-new episode. Until then, take care.